Good afternoon and welcome to Content Chat. This week we're doing something fun that has been on my to-do list for a little bit, which is we're going to give you kind of an inside look at an event that you maybe haven't been to before and get kind of the inside scoop from somebody who's attended on why you as a content marketer might want to consider attending next year. So our guest today is Christoph Trapp, and he is somebody who you may recognize from our content chat on Twitter days, because he's definitely one of our OG folks who goes way back. So thank you so much for joining us today. And for those who don't know you, can you go ahead and tell folks a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, you bet. Nice to see you, Erica. OG of a Twitter chat. I haven't been called that in a while, but certainly those have been the days. Currently a lead content strategy at GrowGetter. We're a growth marketing firm in the market research space. And that's certainly one of the conferences I attended last week. IIEX is in the market research space for the most part. And, you know, we try to help companies create better content, stay in front of people, and stay relevant, right, long term. And as we all know, certainly that works when you create that unique experience, unique story, whatnot. And, you know, I grew up as a journalist. You know, that's when I learned how to ask questions, how to figure out how to get quotable things out of people, right? I mean, asking questions is actually a skill set. You can't just say, hey, talk about Erica, talk about whatever, right? Like, you have to ask the right way to get people to think about it and not just get them to think about this little thing to get that good answer, to get that unique story and really help companies stand out. And especially today with AI, it's so much more important than ever, because you can just go to AI and say, hey, write me an article about what was this conference like, right? You know, and it will find stuff to spew out, but it definitely cannot tell the unique experience that I might share.
Exactly. So I hadn't actually heard of IIEX before you and I were chatting about that being the topic. So tell me a little bit about the conference and how you got involved with it. Because it sounded, you know, after I poked around, it definitely looked like a really juicy conference.
Yeah, I'm not sure like a lot of content marketers honestly would attend IIEX. It's hosted by Greenbook, which is a B2B publisher in the market research space. Mostly it's, you know, market research, technology, services. Of course, that's a wide spectrum, right? Some people do focus groups, other people have technology. At the end of the day, everybody wants to understand their audience better. They want to understand what makes people tick and, you know, what are their motivations, what are their problems, et cetera, et cetera. That's always the thing we talk about in content marketing too, in content strategy. How do you understand your audience? And that's basically what everybody talks about at that conference. I'm totally oversimplifying. So somebody, if I'm missing like the, you know, their little niche, please forgive me. Don't at me and tell me that I forgot one little thing. But that's basically what it comes down to. How do you understand people? And then also, how do you do it quicker? And we see that in content too, right? Everybody wants everything right this second. And that's...
We were talking with Jay Bear about that recently.
You know, I mean, he's a good person to talk to about that topic, certainly. But everybody wants everything right now, right? And nothing takes time anymore. I mean, remember the days when we would spend a week or maybe two writing an article, and now people expect it tomorrow, right? Which, yep, depending on the topic, might actually be doable, but, you know, maybe it's not. But that's, I think, a big, big topic in that industry as well. How do you do things quicker, faster, I guess cheaper? I think it depends on how you define cheaper, however.
Yeah, just like some of those things that we like to think of as being free from a content marketing or marketing standpoint are not, in fact, free. It's just that there's not an added cost above what you're already spending as a company to do your work.
Well, you know, what's interesting too about free, I mean, content marketing has never been free, right? I mean, it's been free because you don't have to spend money on ads per se, but you have to pay for the people that are creating the content, that come up with the strategy, that come up with what are we trying to do? How do we try to do it? And, you know, yeah, can you hire people pretty cheap? Sure. But Can they actually do all the things you have to do? I mean, I'm not going to get started. You know this better than anyone. But back in the day, right, you would write an article, and if your boss liked it, you were golden, right? Today, you have to look at, okay, what has already been written about? What are the different keywords? What are the key phrases? Do we go after this? Do we go after that? What's the angle? Do we have something unique to say? You know, and then it may or may not work.
And don't forget, you also have to think about how will this help AI understand who, you know, what our business does, who we are, and what our, you know, what the right customer is for us. Because AI is consuming content in a very different way than the search robots that we are used to.
It is. And, you know, Andy Crestodina posted about this in one of the Slack channels we're in, how he is, and I'm seeing this too, how he is seeing AI referrals, right? Perplexity, mm-hmm. Microsoft Copilot, whatnot. And I think what it really comes down to, I think Neil Patel talked about this on the Marketing Demystified podcast, which is from GoGetter, of course, with Jen Mancusi. And it really is becoming more and more long tail, right? So instead of saying, how do you do content marketing? I should write about how do you do content marketing in XYZ, right? And then very specifically talk about that. On my personal blog, christophtrapp.com, I have an example. So my daughters have played softball for many years. So I live stream the thing, and I blogged about how to live stream a softball game. And I rank number one for that, right? It has affiliate links, makes a little bit of money here and there. But if you search for how to live stream you sports, I'm not ranking for that at all, right? Because it's very specific, and softball is very different from basketball, which I've done before as well, or forget about football. That is a completely different ball game. So you have to get more and more long tail. I think that's really ultimately what it's going to come down to. And people search like that. They don't search for, you know, something very compact.
And it makes sense, because we now have that, we have the understanding that companies can provide us with really detailed, personalized content. And that's what people have wanted. And it's, you know, what we've been promised ever since, you know, Peppers and Rogers wrote their one-to-one marketing book around 2000. So, you know, 24 years we've been waiting for having that hyper-personalized, you know, super niche down content. And now people's expectations are that there is that very specific piece of content that will show them how to do that thing that they want to do with all of their considerations and use cases. And they don't want something generic.
I mean, who wants something generic, to be honest, you know? And but I think it makes it more difficult. It also actually plays into the whole notion that you have to keep going. You can't just publish one article in a quarter. And I know there's companies, you know, they think about, hey, we're going to put all this effort into this one article, and we hope it's going to be a home run. And you know, it just as well as I do, you know, sometimes something takes off and sometimes it doesn't, right? How do we know? We know because we're trying to be strategic, but there is a certain level of quantity involved. And I know people don't want to hear it, but even James Clear talks about that in Atomic Habits, right? The one group is supposed to come up with the perfect picture, and the other group, they're being told, take as many pictures as you want, right? Just do your best. And who came up with the perfect picture or the better picture? The group that shot 100 pictures versus the one that, you know, was trying to go after the one perfect shot.
Yeah, I loved that story, and it's so true. So let's dive in a little bit to the conference and some of the big themes. And I think maybe we start with the, you know, understanding your audience, because I imagine that you really got some great learnings that we can apply in our content marketing work.
Yeah, it's certainly an interesting field, how it is evolving. At the end of the day, whether it's technology, whether it's qualitative research, who cares what it is, honestly, you have to talk to people, and you have to talk to the right people. And there's also a skill set to on how do you actually have that conversation. There was one conversation I had, and they talked about Gen Z, right? So my kids are Gen Z, and I made the comment. I said, you know what, in this case, I was talking about my 9-year-old, and I said, my 9-year-old allegedly knows how to use technology. I'm like, then why can't she do this one thing? Why can't she do a map to a place? And they said, well, you know what? Maybe they don't use maps the way you and I use them, right? Maybe they use Snapchat. Hopefully she's not. She's only 9. But, you know, like they use Snapchat and that's where they see their friends and that's how they would map to them if they ever had to. So the better question isn't, or the wrong comment is actually, oh, you don't know how to use technology. The better question actually would be, how would you do this? How would you map to somebody? So instead of saying, how come you don't know how to use maps? You know, you ask them, how would you do this? How would you solve this problem? And it was just a great example to me that we need to make less or fewer statements and we have to ask more questions, right? We have to be open. So don't judge people all the time on why they're doing something or, oh my God, that's so stupid. Not that that's what I said about my daughter, but you know what I mean? Like you hear people say that all the time. And I think that was a big, big part. How do you ask the right questions? How do you get in front of the right audiences? And of course, technology today is a big part of that. And just like anywhere, AI was all over the place. You know, like you can use AI for this and that and the other thing. And how do you integrate it all and make that work?
You know, one of the things that I feel like has been one of the biggest impediments to being able to really know your audience for content and being able to have that ongoing kind of ongoing conversations and that feedback loop. I feel like one of the big issues is very few websites and very few like email preference centers have really been giving the person who is going to be receiving the content the ability to control what they're receiving, how often they're receiving it, what format they're receiving it in, where we make a lot of assumptions about the audience as a whole and expect people to kind of seek out the other options, which to me is kind of going about it a little backwards.
Don't get me started on email marketing. You know, the whole thing of, and there's plenty of providers that do this, after I don't open this many emails, you know, they take me out of the whole email sequence. Makes no sense to me still to this day. I know there will be people who will argue with me that that's the best practice. They're not engaged, whatever. But, you know, what's the definition of engagement? Like, seriously, I see stuff. I see headlines come through all the time. I was like, oh, or subject line. Oh, super interesting. Okay, I'm thinking about the subject. I mean, depends what the subject line is, right? If it's like a Jay Schwedelson subject line, which is like it, the only point of it is to get you to open the thing. Maybe it doesn't offer any value just looking at it, but there's some people who send subject lines, just the subject line can be interesting, right? So just because I'm not opening an email to say I'm not engaged, it's just crazy to me and take me out of a sequence, right? So, or maybe the timing was just off. Maybe I'm not engaged because you're sending it to me at the wrong time and I'm totally, whatever the term is, I got to delete my inbox immediately, right? If I don't do something with it now, I'm going to hate myself. So yeah, but why is it not adjusting to my preferences, right? Why is it not adjusting to the best times automatically? Why is it just based on whatever somebody decides, you know? And it's very interesting to me. I think TikTok, as much heat as it takes out there in front of our politicians who allegedly know how social media works. And, you know, like you like one thing or another and you're going down that rabbit hole, right? Because it thinks that that is the topic you really care about. Erica, I like the video of like these Somalian pirates attacking a ship. And like one video, and now my next 100 videos are about.
And now you're probably on a list somewhere that you don't want to be on.
Right? But I'm like, cruise ships being attacked by pilots, freight ships being attacked by pirates, you know, all these different things. Like now I'm going down that rabbit hole. And at some point I have to come back. So, you know, but my point is, it's trying to adjust to what it thinks my tastes are. And there's many other places that don't happen.
Yeah. But it could just ask you, you know, what was it, you know, would you like to see more content like, and it could use AI to tee up the different, you know, ways that the content you just like could be described.
Yeah, absolutely. I go back and forth on the whole liking thing. What did I sign up for the other day? And it asked me all these different things. What topics do you care about? I was like, oh my God, there's like 80 topics. And like, do I care about this topic? I don't know. Is that the right thing? Do you know what I mean? So it's like, there's a fine balance too. Like if you just show people a few different things to ask them, maybe. I just think it's an art and science to ask people questions that are actually meaningful and that actually get results that can be used. And I think there's a lot of companies, a lot of brands that try to do it, but I'm not so sure it always works necessarily.
Totally. So thinking about the conference and the show floor and, you know, people's conversations, what was some of the technology that you were most excited about that you think has some applicability for content?
It's really hard to answer that without having to rattle through an FTC disclosure, right? Lots of clients that were on the show floor. But in general, what I will say is there's a lot of potential with AI. There's a lot of potential with some of those technologies. I think the biggest thing that's going to be interesting to me is how do you mix that with the, let's call it the human touch, right? And I mean, I think we've seen that in content strategy. I mean, there were some companies, they fired their writers because they were like, oh, AI can just write it. AI can't write anything. AI sucks at writing. Now, AI is fantastic if you have good source content, and if you really know how to interrogate it, right? I mean, Christopher Penn, I think, just wrote about that in his newsletter, how important is whatever he calls it, prompt engineering. I think it's super important, right? If you go to it one time and you say, hey, look at this podcast transcript, what are some articles I could write about? I mean, it could say all kinds of different things, right? And it might be useful. And if you say, hey, write me this article, and it's probably not going to be very good, right? So you have to edit it and you have to keep interrogating it and you have to be super specific. And even when you're super specific, sometimes it doesn't listen. And then there's these telltale signs of that it is AI. So even if it wasn't AI written and you use the following terms and phrases, I will not enjoy your content. Yeah. Because it's just like, so for example, in today's fast-moving world, blah, 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 blah.
In today's like, digital world.
Oh, my God. Digital landscape, not world. But, you know, like those terms, it's like, just stop it. Nobody in the world talks like that. And then other terms, maybe some people use them before AI. I don't know. I swear I never saw these before. Unlocked. Unleashed. Is everybody now a dog? I mean, seriously, you know, like.
See, I used a lot of those back in my in-house SaaS days about, you know, 8, 9, 10 years ago. So I think that some of the AI, because it was trained on, you know, historical content and historical marketing out there, I think, unfortunately, it saw that some of that stuff performed really well. And so it's like, oh, this is what we should use more of. And it's like, not necessarily. It's what we've used a lot of. But that doesn't mean that's what's going to resonate moving forward.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just, so what's interesting about that. So let's assume that is correct. And maybe it is. I actually don't have any other evidence to argue any other way. It wasn't like that common. Do you know what I mean? Like if one brand used that, you didn't see it on every subject line. You didn't see it everywhere. Transformed is another one. Unlocked. I think maybe I already said that one. Or there was another one. Oh, hey, Erica. Let's delve into this topic. Have you ever said that sentence in your life before? I have never said that. In fact, the first time I saw AI puke that out, I had to look up if that was actually the correct usage of that word. And like, let's dive into the topic maybe, but delve into the topic. I've never heard anybody say that in my lifetime. And I'm pretty
maybe in a, you know, a British documentary about nature. Perhaps.
Which probably why I haven't seen it, because I wouldn't watch that probably.
You're not a fan of Sir David Attenborough? Oh my gosh. I don't know what to say.
No.
Well, when you think about some of the AI, you know, obviously without naming names, but what were some of the kind of unique use cases you saw that were especially encouraging? Because I think we see a lot of bad AI out there, but AI does have, you know, potential for being really helpful.
We see a lot of bad AI, and we also see a lot of people, I still remember, and they slap AI on everything, right? So when I went to one of the first MACON conferences, the Marketing Artificial Intelligence Conference, right, of the Marketing Artificial Intelligence Institute, way back when, I don't know, 6 years ago or 8 years ago or something like that, one session was, is this AI? Is that AI? And I still thought that's like one of the best sessions I've ever seen, because it's like, is that AI? Is that something else? What is it? Right. And so not everything is AI just because you want it to be. But I think the best use of AI, honestly, in market research and content, really anywhere, is when you can do something much quicker and you can do it accurately if you couldn't do it before. Right. So in market research, like, people would get on planes and then they talk to 10 people in a focus group, or maybe 6 people, right? And now you could talk to all kinds of people, like, I mean, thousands of people, right? In all kinds of different areas. And then you have like the video component, you got the tech, you know, like it's text only, and, you know, it combines everything. So there are ways to do some of those things quicker. Now, sometimes, that's not always the best way to do it. Sometimes you might have to have a combination, right? You use AI for one thing, you use in person for another, or you do a face-to-face or like an in-depth interview or something like that. So I think the trick is to figure out when to use either one, right? And sometimes the technology works and sometimes it doesn't, and it's not the best use case and you want to try it a different way. But I think some of those things, just like in content strategy, if you can do something you couldn't do before and you can do it much quicker. And I think that's where AI comes in. The biggest trick is it's like a whole new skill set, honestly, for the humans, right?
Yep.
How do you check it? How do you challenge it? I mean, I see it all the time when I use like Claude AI. I mean, I'm like interrogating it, you know, I'm like, how do you know that? Where did that come from? Who said that? Are you sure? You know what I mean? And then I do like spot checks and all these different things. So I think that's like the best use of AI. Like, you can do things way quicker. I mean, just let's talk about this live stream, right? Mm-hmm. So like, if you send me the video, I can put it into Opus Clips and we can get sound bites like that. And they're not always perfect. I go in there and I can edit them, but you don't edit the way my previous video editor buddy, who's done it for 30 years and recently retired, used to edit. You actually edit the text. You know, yeah. It's like completely different, way easier. And then you export it, you use it wherever you want to use it. And same with like the transcript, right? You just put this into Otter AI, or I mean, there's a gazillion other tools you can use. And here's your transcript. And you want to find a quote, or you want to be like, did Christoph really say this? I mean, it's like this quick, you know? Yeah. Or, you know, what did Christoph say about this topic? And now you can build like this database almost of content that you can use in different places.
Totally. I personally try to use AI a little bit as an intern. So I assume that it will be good at very specific kinds of tasks. And I assume that, you know, it's going to be as good as whatever the base content as I give it to work from. So I really think it's incredibly useful for creating derivative content. So to your point, taking, you know, the transcript from something like this and, you know, pulling out little snippets, it can do a good job of, hey, I want to take this ebook and turn it into these 3 blog posts. You know, what else would you add? Like, there are a lot of really great ways, but I think where content marketers kind of stumble and where we start to see some of the poorly executed AI infused content is in situations where people haven't defined the brand voice, they don't have a content style guide, they don't have a consistent method of how they approach creating their content, they don't have like a well-defined content format. So when you are not starting from that place of having that real sense of brand personality and having those brand standards and guidelines and all of that governance in place, I think that's where we're seeing folks really kind of struggling right now.
Yeah, absolutely. We just actually talked about this brand style guide on the business storytelling show with Patricia Chui the other day. And so when she was on the show, so my show is 24 minutes, right? Because of the TV slot. And that's like a hard stop. So once we get there, we're done. I'm going to cut you off. We're out of here, right? We're not going on. And honestly, it's been one of the best things for the show because, you know, some podcasts, they go on forever and ever and ever until they're out of stuff to say. Well, depending on the topic, I mean, that could be a long time if you think about it. And, you know, who has time for that, even as the person, like the guest, you know? So 24 minutes. But in those 24 minutes, we covered like enough topics, get this, for probably four articles. So I took all the content, I threw it into Otter and Claude. And I said, hey, what are some of the topics we covered? And, or you don't even have to put into Claude. Otter actually tells you the topics, right?
It has a really nice summary. It's caught up pretty quickly.
It's very nice. And then I can look at that and I can say, okay, very interesting. Like, I haven't written about this. You know, I haven't written about that. Oh, we talked about that? Really? Hey, what did we say about that? You know, like, I don't even remember that because it just kind of went, you know, for 30 seconds. And then you can like expand on those ideas and create additional content. And it's a really great thought starter. Like, I'll give you an example. I wrote an article from that podcast about the topic of writer-editor relationship. Believe it or not, that is literally a phrase people search for. Who would have thought? I didn't, you know, but it came out of that topic. I did some research. I'm like, what can I say about that? I feel very strongly about that topic because in my career, Erica, I've had some really crappy, mean, bossy editors. Do you know what I mean?
Like, oh, I do.
They were just like, oh, I found a typo and I'm going to let you know how I feel about it. You know, I'm like, just fix this stupid typo. Like, seriously.
I had one editor who gave me a really juicy assignment to interview somebody that they had a bunch of preconceived ideas about. It's not somebody they'd ever spoken to or whose work they'd ever looked at. So when I turned in my really good, juicy article, I got it back with a completely brand new intro that set things up in a way that I wasn't comfortable with. And I pushed back and I said, well, you can publish it like this with your name on it, but I'm not throwing this person under the bus with all of this baloney like this, because I'm not going to ruin my reputation as a brand new journalist by letting you do this. I'm like, now use your words and your skills as an editor to tell me what you would like me to do to improve upon the intro I wrote. Because like that is, you know, the kind of skill that I think a lot of people struggle to hone. Instead, they're like, here's how I would do it instead. It's like, that's not helpful to me. That doesn't teach me as a writer.
And you know what? It's that, I think that's one of the biggest shifts, honestly, in content from 20 years ago. People would just be like, this is how I would do it. And I'm thinking, I'm like, okay, and why is that the standard? You know, now the standard actually should be, okay, you should change it if it doesn't make sense, right? Or if it's wrong, or if it's just like, there's no value to it. I'll give you an example. Strong, strong opinion inbound, my friends. Branded hashtags. I think they're the biggest waste of time. Like, I don't care if you grow the following and the brand awareness that at some point somebody might use the branded hashtag. But guess what? They're going to find the brand just using the brand name. So it's like total waste of time. So if you're going to use hashtags, just use topical hashtags, right? So so I know the numbers on that. I know that's how it works. And I also know that some marketing teams will say, oh, we need to use it because it feels good to us. But back in the day, that was totally accepted. Today, look at the numbers, see what works, you know, see what doesn't. Certainly bring your opinion to the table, but back it up, right? Show us, why is it better? And then sometimes talking about AI a little bit here, I mean, even Grammarly, some suggestions in Grammarly are just total garbage. You know, they changed the complete, they changed the complete meaning of what I was trying to say. And I get it. Sometimes they want to change or delete really or just, and sometimes it makes sense, but sometimes there's a purpose for it to be in there.
Yeah, and so like you being conversational and showing that a human being wrote it.
Exactly. So, you know, if you're going to change stuff, make sure you change it for a reason other than, oh, my personal preference is that you use this word and not this word. I'm like, but that other word, it is way clearer.
Yeah. I can't tell you how many times I've, you know, in my former life, I worked with places where there are just executives who had feelings about words they didn't like. And so you had to memorize those feelings because, of course, they didn't have a style guide that said, instead of, you know, using this word, use that word. And it's fine if, you know, there are some of those things here and there. But having the expectation that human beings should carry around someone else's personal preferences about language in their head, that is not a good use of anyone's brain space or, you know, daily recall. But still, so many places don't have style guides.
You know, and the other thing is too, is, so let's say you are the CEO or whoever, high ranking executive, and certainly they got there because they have opinions and they push things forward. But are you the target audience? Are you actually the people, your marketing team is trying to reach? Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, and usually they're not.
Like, they're probably not most of the time, right? So, like, why is that the gold standard? What you really should be doing is, and I get it, we all have internal audiences, but the problem is when you create everything for your internal audience only, like the actual audience might be left out because they don't get it because you're using the wrong terminology, you're sharing the wrong stories, right? And I think sometimes that can be hard for executives to wrap their head around on, you know, how do you actually make sure you're reaching the right audience, you're talking their language, and, you know, how do you keep that going? I think that's another big thing that I see, especially in content. People run one campaign and they go, hey, how come we're not going viral yet, right? They're in a very niche audience and a niche vertical, and they're comparing their numbers to like The Bachelor.
Yeah.
You know?
And if your target audience of the ideal people to see your content is only 500 people, then your going viral is a very different number than, mm-hmm. you know, somebody with a more general audience. But I, you know, I really have to say one of the things we see, to your earlier point around, you know, the CEO thinking they're the target audience or that we should use their language and preferences. We see this happen so often in customer case stories or customer case studies, which, you know, by their intrinsic nature are supposed to be about the customer's journey and the customer's experience. Yet too many companies, their case studies are all about the company that, you know, is selling whatever it is and about their branding and trying to shoehorn a description of what they did for the customer into something that's basically the brand language. And that's always so sad because when you go back in those situations to like the source interviews, the source conversations, there's really juicy content there because I have been employed to take some of those really terrible case studies that didn't actually tell you anything about the customer. And I've been given the original recordings and sat there and said, well, why on earth would you take all of these great words coming from the mouth of your customer and not put those words into this content? It's so much more impactful than a, you know, abbreviated summary by somebody in product marketing saying, oh, they found it to be very helpful and they will definitely use this again. No one cares that the brand is saying that. You want to hear the customer talking about their problem and how much better it's gotten to be. So I think that is really an opportunity.
Yeah, especially when people just talk about their own things. I think it's just, I mean, everybody talks about themselves, right? So it does take a little bit of practice on how do you adjust it to your customer? How do you talk about the problems your target audience faces and not just yourself? Now, certainly you want to share your unique stories, right? That's how you stand out, in my opinion, in Google. Like, you know, AI can make that up. You know what I mean?
Like, AI can have life experience.
They don't have, I mean, just think about when I talked, I mean, I could literally see your face light up or get angry or whatever, right? When I said, I had some bad editors and my, like, and you could relate to that. Do you know what I mean? And AI might just say, the editor-writer relationship is important in this fast-moving digital world.
In today's digital landscape.
Yes, right? I mean, totally different setup.
Totally. Well, before we wrap things up, what, you know, if you had to like kind of summarize the things that you're going to do differently, because, you know, whenever you go to a conference, you always come back and you have to process all the notes and you got to talk to people about what you saw there and really think it through. Like, what do you feel you're going to be thinking about differently or doing differently as a result of having attended this event?
You know, I think the biggest thing for really anybody is to think about what technology is worth using. How do you evaluate it quickly? How do you understand what it actually is trying to solve, right? So I think the biggest problem, somebody asked me, they said, why do you use this specific thing, piece of software? And I said, because it solves exactly my pain point. Okay, are there other tools that do the same thing? I'm like, probably. But I can't make it my, you know, life's mission to test every tool that may or may not solve my problem. So until that thing does not solve my problem anymore, why would I look anywhere else? And this is, I think, why it's so important to like get out there, to be fast, to get in front of people. Because once you have that spot, right, it's actually quite hard to unseat the incumbent.
Yeah.
It's not impossible.
The walk-in. Nobody wants to learn a new, you know, suite of technology. Nobody wants to integrate new technology into their existing workflows. You want to keep using what's working.
Exactly. And, you know, but it is not impossible. I mean, I'll just, for example, I mean, I used social media scheduling tools, right, for a long, long time, and I don't use any anymore, right? I schedule natively on LinkedIn, and that's basically it. On X, I kind of given up. I still live stream there, and the live stream is actually working pretty well, but I don't schedule, you know, back in the day, whenever that was, 10 years ago, you know, Jeff Bezos would say, just use whatever the tool was. I think he uses Agora Pulse now. I could be wrong. And like, repeats his pulse, you know? I'm like, I don't even, like, it's not even worth my effort anymore on X right now. So things evolve, and the incumbent can be unseated, but it is hard, right? So I use Grammarly right now. I couldn't even tell you how another software tool could come in and unseat Grammarly. Like, what would happen? Like, I can't even picture it. Do you know what I mean? Like how
what would it have to offer that would make it compelling? Yeah.
I don't know. I can't think of one thing. That doesn't mean that thing doesn't exist. But in my mind right now, like Grammarly is everywhere, right? I mean, yeah. I have a plugin. It basically checks everything, you know, all the time, awesome. No matter what I'm in. So how would it get unseated? I don't know. Or Restream. Sorry, StreamYard. I know we're on StreamYard, but I use Restream, you know, very similar to StreamYard. But I'm like, why would I switch to StreamYard?
Exactly.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
I love that. And you and I definitely, I think, use a lot of the same tools, just because once you find that tool that really works for your brain and streamlines your life in some way, you're going to just keep going with it. So it is going to be fascinating to see how things continue to accelerate. And, you know, teams who are not putting technology workflows into place and who aren't using not figuring out how they're going to use AI effectively, I think are really going to be struggling, because the expectation in most, you know, decent sized companies is that you have to figure out how to use AI in order to, you know, do more with less, because do more with less is always the marketing mantra. And because people in various places are really trumpeting AI and AI use cases, you know, people can't just be like, oh, I hate AI and I'm never using it. Like, that's not going to be a workable line in the sand to draw. That's not the hill you want to die on.
You know, it's like one of those things when people say to me, oh, I don't take advice from TikTok. And I'm like, how is that even a statement? So for example, there are licensed, just to pick an example, there are licensed therapists on TikTok who share like really good advice, right? Like backed by science, backed by their experience. Why would that not be good advice? Now, if it was me going on there and telling everybody how to fix their mental health, I mean, I get it. How do you verify that kind of thing? But how do you verify anything? How do we know the person quoted in the mainstream media is actually as qualified as that article claims they are? Do you know what I mean? So it's like, you can't just make these blanket statements. I don't like AI. There's so many things, so many different applications of AI today. Like, how can you say that? It's like
saying, they probably are using AI and don't even realize it because AI is embedded in so many things that aren't trumpeting the fact that AI is how their magic happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, this has been such a fun conversation, Christoph, and I hope we have the opportunity to do it again. But for folks that are either watching live now or who are watching the recap, where should they go to see more of what you're getting into and more content from you?
Yeah, christophtrapp.com. Check that out. GrowGetter.io is the growth marketing firm where I work. And please feel free to connect on LinkedIn if you haven't. Make sure you let me know you saw me here so I know you're a human and are not just going to sell me something I probably don't need. If you want to talk to me about the problems I face and want to book a 15-minute meeting, usually don't have time for that, but I'm happy to connect with anyone and stay connected and check out your content. And the Business Storytelling Show episode, we're like 660 some episodes into that. So I hope you check that out wherever you listen to podcasts. It's also on DBTV.
Love it. Well, thank you again for being our guest, and everybody out there, we'll see you again next week on Content Chat. Bye, guys.